Okay, I welcome all of you to Wednesday Sutta teaching session. So in this session we are taking a sutta and we are discussing that. Basically the idea is to get some insight through various teachings of the Buddha and in particular try to use them in our practice. So to begin the session we'll pay homage to the Buddha and then we'll proceed. සාදු සාදු නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස in this session I have taken Sabbasava Sutta. This is the second sutta in Majjhima Nikaya and this is quite wonderful sutta, which Buddha explains a certain level of kilesa, certain level of defilements. As I have discussed in the very first day, there are three levels of defilements that according to the teaching. The very first level is where we are doing some sort of a transgression, vitikkama. We couldn't control ourselves, so we may be blaming someone, we may be hitting someone. Likewise, we are transgressing the precepts. So that level is called transgressive level or vitikkama kilesa. And then even though we may be able to stop such, still there may be ongoing thoughts inside the mind, and therefore a certain level of thoughts may be available, and it could be due to various defilements. And this defiled mind states are called pariyutthana kilesa, where the surface level of the mind is very much occupied with various defilements. And these are, in a way, we can understand. That is, whenever there are certain amount of defilements available in the mind, we can even recognize it. And even if we can't control ourselves and then we are breaking the precepts and maybe hitting another person, killing another animal, and maybe lying, slandering, and all that kind of different transgressions, that also we can understand. But Buddha is talking about certain hidden layer of defilements, and they are sometimes called anusaya. Those are latent tendencies, and also and another way it is defined or explained as asavas or influxes. So in this sutta, Buddha is explaining seven ways to overcome those stains, those influxes. So why they are called influxes is that actually we discussed these points in the very first day. That is where when certain defilements are very much resident in our mind for a long, long time, they make some amount of tendency. They make some kind of a habit in the mind. Now later, the mind become fairly conditioned, fairly programmed to work in a certain way. So whenever a certain, form is taken to the mind, then there's a certain pattern of thinking going to trigger. If we hear a certain sound, there's a certain pattern of thinking going to trigger. If we get some smells, again another pattern of thinking going to trigger. Whenever we are going through some taste, certain pattern of thinking is going to trigger. So likewise, so we seems to have certain pre-programmed structures. So we can say in today's, in software point of view, those are like stored procedures. So we in the mind there are certain stored procedures. So according to the external stimuli, so that kind of a stored procedure, that kind of a latent tendency, that kind of a hidden tendency going to trigger. So we then are very much like robots, because we are pre-programmed, our mind is conditioned. So in a way, there is no freedom in that sense. So therefore, Buddha is coming out with various strategies to overcome these latent tendencies, hidden tendencies, and that is why this sutta is quite interesting and quite important. So we discussed seven strategies. Now we are actually discussing seven strategies. The first one is by seeing, recognizing. So this is one of the most important aspects discussed in this sutta. That is number one, dasana pahatamba, by properly directing our mind in proper thinking, proper way of thinking, change in the perspective. So this is very much the important part in dasana pahatamba, where Buddha advises us to go to the source rather than just being the surface level, just on the superficial level. Go to the source, go to the root, and that is where the yoniso manasikara is dealt, is heavily emphasized. So in yoniso manasikara, so we are asked to go to the source without just hang around in the surface. So now we are very much go to the root and trying to find out the real causes. Suppose when there is a kind of a sight happens, when we are seeing something. So rather than simply going to our habitual way of thinking, so probably we can think how it is happening. We can go to the root, how these things are operating as a cause and effect relationship. So likewise, we can in a way somewhat introduce some wisdom according to the teaching. Now this actually requires a certain amount of understanding. So that is where mentioned here in whenever someone is well educated in that sense of the Buddha's teaching, he had heard Buddha's teaching, he is trying his best to live according to it, and he has associated good people, noble people or some good people, and as a result he has some understanding about what to think and what not to think, or what is beneficial to think or what is not beneficial to think, what is harmful to think. As a result, he is trying his best to think what is useful, what is beneficial, and he is trying his best to not to think what is harmful. So as a result, Buddha says, what happens is that the unarisen taints does not arise and the arisen taints are abandoned. Because he know how to handle the mind, he know how to use the mind effectively, and he know how to think properly, wisely. So as a result, he is thinking in a certain manner which will reduce the arisen taints, which will reduce the arisen asavas, activated asavas, and it will avoid the arising of new asavas. So therefore, this way of thinking is quite interesting, quite important. And Buddha says, in this sutta, Buddha has given primarily to the focus for Four Noble Truths. So we discussed that also, where if we want to think something, Buddha is asking us to reflect, come back to ourselves, just to investigate the mind, and see whether there is any kind of unsatisfactoriness, any kind of suffering, any kind of dukkha. So this in a way requires a certain amount of mindfulness. So this is where mindfulness comes to the front, where we can't do this activity without mindfulness. So we need certain amount of clarity of the mind, and again already established mindfulness, and then only we would be able to recognize if there is any unsatisfactoriness available in the mind. Otherwise, we simply become a victim of the ongoing thought process. But on the other hand, if we have mindfulness, if we have practiced mindfulness, if we have developed mindfulness, then that paves the way to understand about our mind. Very much like, say, if you are engaged in walking meditation, say, for example, when your foot touches the ground, you are able to recognize that feeling. You are able to recognize that sensation. If your hand is touching another, say, rough surface, you are able to recognize that roughness. Similarly, if your body going through certain painful feeling, you are able to recognize that painful feeling. if it is going through some pleasurable feeling, you are able to recognize that pleasurable feeling. Rather than being caught to it, you can come out of it and observe it like an outsider. So this perspective is extremely important. Whenever there are certain feelings available, when it may be bodily or mental, whenever there are various sensations available, we should be able to recognize them. Rather than just being caught to them, we should be able to recognize them. So this principle can be applied to the mind as well, where whenever any kind of thought available in the mind, we should be able to recognize it, rather than supporting that thought process, rather than simply being a victim to that thought process, rather than simply encouraging that thought process, we should be able to stand outside and look at it objectively. So this is extremely important. So this is what we have to practice in Four Noble Truths, where whenever there is any kind of resistance in the mind, any kind of resentment in the mind, any kind of defilement in the mind, any kind of unrest in the mind, stress in the mind, so we should be able to recognize it. So once we are able to recognize it, then we can go to the source by applying Yoniso Manasikara, going to the source, what is the reason, what is the cause of this unsatisfactoriness, we are somewhat investigating. Then as a result, we can come across the second noble truth, that is Dukkha Samudaya, and Buddha says this is the craving. So there may be some kind of a desire available in the mind which is causing some unsatisfactoriness, some kind of unrest, some kind of frustration. So once we recognize this desire, we may be able to let go of it. So therefore the activity or the function we need to do with regard to the samudaya is that we need to let it go, rather than holding it, rather than encouraging that desire. Once we recognize that desire, we have to let it go. So as a result of desire being let go of, the mind calms down. Mind become free from desire, and as a result, mind become free from any tension, any stress, any unsatisfactoriness, any dukkha. Now it is fairly peaceful, and this is the cessation of dukkha. There is no dukkha. Dukkha has calm down, dukkha has faded away, dukkha has ceased. And Buddha asks us to recognize this. Buddha asks us to realize this peaceful state. This is the Dukkha Nirodha Satcha, where there is no dukkha, there is no unsatisfactoriness, there is no resistance, there is no any frustration. At the moment, mind is calm, mind is peaceful. So this peacefulness has to be appreciated. Rather than thinking it is boring, we need to recognize this peaceful feeling in the mind, this kind of equanimity in the mind, kind of a rest, kind of a stillness available in the mind. So this stillness, this coolness, this calmness, this clarity, this spaciousness has to be recognized. So if one is applying this strategy again and again, so that is the development of the path. That is number four, the fourth noble truth. Where we need to cultivate this path. We need to again and again apply this path. It is not something we can apply just 1 hour and then forget about it. Rather, it's a lifetime application. And again, it has to be a very practical, pragmatic application, because it is not that we are simply remembering these theories and then forget it. Rather, we simply have to apply it again and again onto our own mind. Whenever there is suffering, whenever there is unsatisfactoriness, we have to apply this simple formula to it. We have to recognize that frustration, that unsatisfactoriness, that dukkha, and we need to understand it properly. As a result, we can recognize the cause, any kind of a desire, and that desire has to be let go of. And as a result, the desire is now gone and the dukkha has ceased, and that cessation, that calmness, that clarity, that spaciousness, that coolness has to be realized. So this we need to do again and again. So this we discuss in length during last couple of weeks, and then we get on to the next method, that is by rest training. there are certain level of asavas, influxes that we can control, we can subside, or we can even avoid arising them by restraining ourselves. So when we are when we are using our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and the mind, we need to maintain certain amount of restraint. Otherwise, we'll be unnecessarily inviting certain level of defilements. Because you know, nowadays there are various things to look at. Various movies, various say TV shows, dramas, and thousand and one things are there to see. But if we simply gratify our senses, then we'll be in the trouble as practitioners. So we need to maintain certain amount of restraint, otherwise difficult to control the mind. Because ultimately, mind is the one going to affect. We may be seeing various things. Suppose you may be seeing a movie, you may be seeing a musical show. So likewise, you can see various things, you can hear various songs. But ultimately, the impact to the mind has to be considered. All this what we have seen is just gone after we close our eyes. All what we have heard is gone once that whatever the song is finished. But some kind of an impediment going to lie in our mind. So mind get affected. So therefore, if we want to clear our mind, if we want to cleanse our mind, we need to be very careful on how we are handling our senses. So that is what discussed in this Asava Sangvara Pahatabba. We need to maintain some amount of restraint. And then Buddha talks about Patisevana Pahatabba, where Buddha talks about Patisevana Pahatabba, where we need to, whenever we are using food, whenever we are using clothing, when we are using any kind of a dwelling place and any medical requisites, medicine, so we need to properly use them without allowing defilements to arise. Say for example, when you are eating your food. So if we do some wise reflection, it helps to avoid the arising of new defilements. Say if you think that this is extremely delicious food and I am the one only having this kind of food, no one else is having this kind of food, and then certain amount of conceit going to arise. On the other hand, if you have the other side, why I have to eat like this kind of very raw food, why can't I get all the delicious food, why someone else is having all this delicious food, why not me? So if you think like that, then kind of a depression, kind of a jealousy can arise. But on the other hand, if we know why we are eating, what is the purpose, then we in a way very realistic. And we know the amount of food, what is the benefit of that food. And we are simply eating it to maintain the body and to continue our practice. Then we know the proper reasons. So if we can reflect like that, then the arising of new defilements are stopped. So likewise, when we are using a house, when we are using clothes, when we are using medicine, Buddha asks us to reflect the proper reasons. So once we reflect proper reasons, then there's a high possibility that we can maintain the undefiled mind, unentangled mind. And that is actually discussed as number third. And then number four, Buddha says about Adivasana Pahatabba, where we need to be patient. We need to tolerate certain situation. Say for example, today, if it is really hot, so you may try your best to, say, switch on a fan or a air conditioner, but when you are going out, you may have to bear a certain amount of heat. Similarly, if it is quite cold, you may have to bear a certain amount of cold. If there are many mosquitoes, if there are many ants, flies, you may try your best, but certain amount you may have to bear. Likewise, certain bodily painful feelings, you may have to bear a certain amount. So likewise, in this life, you can't make everything perfect. Certain amount we have to bear, certain amount we have to tolerate. We have to be patient with others. So if we can maintain this kind of tolerance, if you can maintain this kind of patience, then a lot of troubles can be avoided. If we are going to argue with others, if we are going to fight too much, if we are always going to complain, then we'll be always in kind of an unsatisfactoriness, some kind of a frustration, because we always complain. But if we can bear a certain amount, if we can tolerate a certain amount, if we can be patient with the situation, then we can protect our mind. So this is discussed at the as the number four taints that should be abandoned by enduring. So these four strategies actually we have discussed. Today we need to discuss number five, taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. So these are in a way very much like common sense, because whenever we are associating bad people, we know, I mean, we are going to we are also going to get wrong ideas, wrong views. So avoiding such bad people is the wise thing to do. So there are various people who has various bad qualities or certain wrong views or bad habits. They may be drunks. So likewise, there are many, many different types of people are there. So we have to be little careful when we are associating people. So similarly, actually this number five, the examples are very much given, which related to a forest monk. You know, this sermon is delivered to the monks. So therefore, Buddha is considered in the setting at that time where various forests are there. There are various wild animals are available, and kind of broken trees are available, and then sort of difficult paths are available, and thorny areas are available, then certain cliffs are available. So those are in a way quite dangerous. So Buddha is asking us not to go there. It's quite obvious, quite common sense, to avoid dangerous animals, to avoid any kind of cliffs, any kind of stumps, and any thorny areas. So because those are dangerous, you get trapped there, you get wounded because by encountering them. So therefore Buddha asks us to avoid such places and such animals. And similarly, when you are sitting, say you are sitting for a meditation, so you have to find a fairly protected area rather than sitting on a cliff. Because when you close your eyes, and even if you fall asleep, we should be we don't need to worry, because our body is in a comfortable situation, body is in a protected place. So likewise, so Buddha asks us to find out the suitable places to dwell. Actually, this same topic is explained in detail in another sutta. So this is what in a way quite relevant here. That sutta is called Sevitabba Sevitabba Sutta, where Buddha discusses about what to associate and what not to associate. So this is quite practical. So in this sutta, Buddha says certain bodily conduct has to be associated in case it is developing wholesome states, and again unwholesome states are diminished. I think you get the point. Now, if there is any kind of bodily conduct which helps to develop wholesome states in the mind, and which helps to diminish unwholesome states in the mind, so that kind of a bodily conduct, Buddha asks us to associate. Buddha asks us to practice. Say, on the other hand, the opposite. If certain kind of bodily conduct is detrimental to your practice, is detrimental to your wholesomeness, and it is kind of arousing the unwholesome states in the mind, then we should not associate such bodily conduct. So therefore, Buddha says, these bodily conducts are two categories, can be divided into two categories. The ones which is suitable to associate, that is sevitabbampi, and certain ones are not suitable to associate, asevitabbampi, not to be associated. So the not suitable ones, detrimental ones, harmful ones, we should not associate. I think the point is clear. So whenever we do any kind of a bodily activity, we need to check whether this is harmful to me, harmful to the others, or whether this is beneficial to me and beneficial to the others. And again, most importantly, whether this is increasing the wholesome states in the mind and reducing or decreasing the unwholesome states in the mind. Or is it increasing the unwholesome states in the mind and reducing the wholesome states in the mind? So we need to choose. Suppose you are going to talk with someone. If that conversation going to arouse various defilements, going to arouse anger in you, going to arouse kind of restlessness in the mind. So that indicates unwholesome states are going to arise and wholesome states are going to reduce. So in such situation, better avoid that kind of association. So similarly, Buddha says verbal conduct. There may be various things we may be talking, we may be discussing. So that discussion, that speech, if it is contributing towards the arising of good states in mind, wholesome states in mind, and reduces the unwholesome states in mind, so then better continue such speech, continue such discussion, associate such discussion. On the other hand, if we are engaged in certain discussion or any kind of a speech which is detrimental to the wholesomeness, which is in a way increasing unwholesome states in the mind, then Buddha asks us not to associate such verbal conduct. Similarly, the mental conduct, where we may have kind of thoughts in the mind. So if we feel that if I'm going to encourage this kind of thinking, if my mind get further polluted, if my mind get further entangled, if the mind going to get further corrupted, then such kind of thoughts should not be associated, should not be encouraged. On the other hand, if there is certain kind of loving kindness thought, compassionate thought, humble thought, and kind of a wise thought, then associating such thought may be useful and it may lead to further improve the wholesomeness in the mind and may reduce the unwholesomeness in the mind. So therefore, Buddha asks us to associate such mental state. Similarly, if there is any kind of a inclination in the mind, so you know, sometimes mind likes to think a certain way. Sometimes mind likes to think in a certain pattern. So we need to recognize that and accordingly we have to encourage it or to avoid it. And there may be various perceptions in the mind and there is different views in the mind. So there we need to be in a way quite selective on what are we going to associate. So this is our choice. I mean, it is not that we simply have to go through each and everything. Rather, we have to be selective on what we are associating. So this is what basically encourage in this sutta. So but whenever there is forms, sounds, odors, flavors, tangibles, mind objects, that is rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, potabba, dhamma. So these are the typical sense stimuli. So Buddha asks us to be selective on these. So what is the selection criteria? That is depending on whether these are beneficial to us in the sense that whether they are promoting wholesomeness in the mind or are they promoting unwholesomeness in the mind. If something is promoting wholesomeness in the mind, Buddha is giving recommendation, okay, you can associate. If it is promoting unwholesomeness in the mind, Buddha asks us to avoid it. And there may be various clothes, maybe certain food, certain houses, any dwelling places, villages, towns, cities, countries, and persons. Whatever we associate, we have to be a little selective, because it is quite difficult at the beginning to protect the mind. Because mind is, suppose you are just started your practice and you are just trying to develop the mindfulness. If you start to associate all the people, all the variety of people, they may tell 1001 things. Some may encourage you, some may discourage you, some may give various other opinions. So you may get more confused. On such situation, you have to be selective on whom I am going to associate. Who are my Kalyana Mitras? So therefore, as practitioners, when we start our practice, certain amount of our friends might going to leave. And some other new friends going to come, because we recognize who are helping us, who are guiding us, who are helpful in this path. On the other hand, we will recognize who are constantly taking us in the wrong path, encourage us in wrong habits. So we may recognize, and then slowly we have to drop them, we have to avoid them. So this is in a way obvious. So this is what discussed in Parivajjana Pahatabba. So we have to have some common sense. We need to know who to associate. We need to know where to associate, what to associate, which is beneficial to our practice, which is beneficial and encouraging to the wholesomeness in our mind. So this is number 5. Then we can come to number 6. Taints that should be abandoned by removing. This is also related to the mind. So where Buddha says, whenever there is kind of a sensual desire aroused in the mind, that is kama vitakka. You know, as human beings, we have various way of thinking, various sensual desires, sexual fantasies, and different way of thinking is available. So when such kind of thinking, such thought is available in the mind, Buddha says not to tolerate. Nadi vaseti. So we are not going to encourage it. We may have various ways of handling it, like in Chittanupassana. If you have a certain level of mindfulness already developed, so you can simply be mindful. So depending on the strength of the mindfulness, those defilements will fade away. So the time taken to fade away will depend on the strength of the mindfulness. If you have very good mindfulness, the defilements will fade away instantly. But on the other hand, if you have weak mindfulness, you may have to little struggle with these defilements, because not yet the mindfulness is strong. So likewise, we have to be careful on these sensual desires, various kama vitakka available in the mind. So Buddha says, when such is available in the mind, not to tolerate it, not to encourage it. And we need to abandon it, pajahati, we need to abandon it. And vinodeti, we need to remove them. And does away with him, away with them. And again, we have to try our best to keep the mind free from them, not to arouse them. The mind is like a, animal, kind of. Sometimes we call as a monkey, sometimes we call it as a wild bull. Where if we allow that wrong side, if we allow that bad side, if we encourage that bad side, we may be in trouble. So therefore, when kind of a tendency is there for such thoughts to arise, we have to be vigilant, we have to be careful, and slowly we have to remove it. So in a way, this is quite valid at our early stages of our practice. Because in our early stages of the practice, our mindfulness is weak, and the defilements, the hindrances are strong. So therefore we have to be quite careful about ourselves, quite careful about the mind. What are we going to think? What are we going to associate? Is this thinking pattern going to help me, or will be harmful to me? is this kind of an association going to help me or is it harmful to me? So likewise, we have to be careful, especially in the early stages. But if you have fair amount of mindfulness, if you practice mindfulness for many years and now there is a lot of confidence in you and you know how to handle defilements, you are not afraid of them, you have a lot of experience in using mindfulness or applying mindfulness to various defilements, you are quite confident in Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, then in a way you can allow the mind to little play and recognize various mental patterns, the mechanics of the mind, and that is also necessary. But if we are still in the early stages, we have to be careful because still we are not matured enough. We are not strong enough. We don't have much confidence. On such situation, avoidance, restrainment, and when certain defilements are available, to remove them early is quite advisable. And then the recent thought of ill will. So when there is a kind of vyapada, any kind of ill will going to arise in the mind, suppose you are meeting someone and that conversation lead to some resentment in the mind, some anger is now arising in the mind. So if you can recognize that anger, so we should not promote it. We should not encourage that anger. So we have to be vigilant. Okay, now anger is going to arise. If I promote this, I may even blame this person. I may hit this person. So therefore, I have to little control the mind. Or little, I have to start a mechanism, a method to overcome this aroused anger. So we always have to be therefore on check about the mind. We have to be watchful about the mind. And on the other hand, any kind of cruelty, any certain thought of cruelty, vihinsa vitakka. So if such thought is there, so assuming, suppose like you are thinking bad of another person, let him kill or let him die, let him get caught to something, or likewise if you have some bad thoughts about certain person, certain another thing, so in a way it is harmful to the mind. And you are thinking bad of another person, but that very thought is harmful to ourselves. So you can't hurt another person without hurting ourselves, yourselves. So therefore, whenever any kind of anger is available in the mind, we are the ones going to burn. We are the ones going to be hurt. So therefore, if we know that, we need to, when such anger is present in the mind, slowly, slowly, we have to allow it to fade away. We have to allow it to, we need to apply mindfulness. We need to be aware of it. And without being caught to them, we have to observe it and let it go. So these are certain mechanics or certain strategies Buddha mentioned. And in general, Buddha says, whatever the arisen unwholesome state, so we should not tolerate, we should not encourage it, but we need to abandon it, we need to remove it, and we have to maintain a mind which is free from such defilements. So maintaining such defilement-free mind, certain clear mind, pure mind, wholesome mind is quite important. Because this wholesomeness has to be encouraged, because so that is what going to cleanse the mind. That is what going to strengthen the mind. And whenever unwholesome states are available in the mind, we should be aware of them. And accordingly, we have to let them go without promoting them, without encouraging them. So actually, this we can even relate with the viriya. You know, viriya also has four aspects. Basically, to whenever unwholesome states are available in the mind, we have to remove it. And that is one kind of a viriya, one kind of an effort. And when there is no any unwholesome states, we have to keep the mind free without allowing unwholesome states to arise. So that is another virya. On the other hand, if there are no wholesome states in the mind, we have to have effort to develop such wholesome states. And again, if there are some wholesome states available in the mind, we should do our best to cultivate such wholesomeness, develop such wholesomeness, protect such wholesomeness, and to complete, to fulfill that wholesomeness. So those are the four types of virya, sammapadhana, Buddha has preached. So this is also applicable here. I mean, fairly resembles with this teaching where we have certain amount of virya energy to look at the mind and to encourage wholesomeness and to discourage unwholesomeness. So mind therefore become spiritually strong, quite clear, and we are becoming confident about our practice. So as a result, the defilements going to reduce. These asavas going to reduce because they are not getting a chance to propagate. They are not getting a chance to increase. Because you know, these asavas, influxes, are encouraged or going to grow only when we practice that pattern. Say for example, whenever you see someone, if some kind of bad thought going to arise, if some resentment going to arise, if you do it again and again, then only it's going to encourage, that pattern going to be strengthened. But assume that you are not doing it. You know that the certain thought pattern is now triggered, but if you recognize it and allow it to fade away, then that pattern is not going to encourage. That pattern, on the other hand, going to discourage. We are not promoting that thought pattern. We are not promoting that tendency. We are not promoting that underlying habit. Rather, we recognize it. Rather, we simply allow it to fade away, to weaken it. So this is the strategy Buddha is discussing in all these techniques. Now actually we have come to number 6, and remaining is number 7, that is related to the meditation, Bhavana Pahatamba. Actually I hope to discuss that on next week, because that requires more information, and that is actually worthy of discussing, you know, for a whole time, whole day, because it is important for us as practitioners. So I keep it for the next time, and if you have questions now, you can come up with the questions.
Hello, Bunting. Yeah. This is Jennifer. Sorry, I do not have the ability to raise my hand as a co-host.
Yeah.
But I do have a question specifically about the first strategy, this seeing. Is this, I'm assuming that the seeing is part of the mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
And, okay, and I feel like I understand the first part of that Four Noble Truths and seeing the first part of Four Noble Truths, right? Because that is just through the noting of various things that arises in the mind. My question is about kind of the second and third Noble Truth, and how do we use a mindfulness practice to be able to recognize the cause of suffering and letting go of that desire. Specifically, in my own experience, sometimes there is a natural arising of the insight of, right now I am dissatisfied with this pain in my leg because there's a desire for a pleasurable sensation. It very quickly arises, that insight arises very quickly following the recognition of the source of the suffering, but that's not always the case. So how do we develop this ability to arise this insight of the cause of suffering? Because in all of my denoting, it's not always clear. So That's the second noble truth. And as for the third noble truth, sometimes just by recognizing the unsatisfactoriness, kind of that desire just automatically disappears and goes away. And so you almost don't even have that chance to see what was the cause of the suffering without going into prolific thinking. So hopefully my question is clear, Bhante.
Yeah, I'll try to answer. So basically, I mean, when our mindfulness develops, only we can recognize the thoughts at its early stages. Say, if our mindfulness is little weakened, so those thoughts may go for a while, and we may only spot them at their some grown level, at their some grown state. So in a way, little late, we are too late at that time. So we therefore have to deal with it in different way to overcome it. But as our mindfulness grows, so we would be able to recognize thoughts at their very inception. So the same principle applies to the mind when we apply these Four Noble Truths. Say for example, when there is any kind of unsatisfactoriness available in the mind, if we have less mindfulness, we may even promote that unsatisfactoriness. We may even promote that frustration. And as a result, we only recognize it after it has grown to a certain level. But if we have very good mindfulness, then we know what is the peacefulness in the mind. So we are trying to maintain such peace. We are trying to maintain some such clarity in the mind, some calmness, serenity in the mind. But at the same time, due to various causes, now assume that we lose this calmness. Some kind of a unsatisfactoriness, some kind of a frustration, some kind of a burden going to arise in the mind. So this burdened mind, this entangled mind, this unsatisfied mind has to be recognized at that very moment. Once we recognize that, then almost immediately we can dig down and see what is the cause, what is the desire. As you said, probably we may be expecting some comfort. Say we are sitting on a cushion, but our leg going to hurt. So we may expecting some comfortable situation. So bodily pain is one thing, but this mental part is something we are adding. So in this, by applying Four Noble Truths, the most importantly what is happening is to the mental part. So why are we adding this mental frustration, mental unsatisfactoriness to this physical suffering, to this physical pain? So that is where we are now trying to avoid. So when there is any kind of a bodily pain, say for example, if we are thinking in wrong way, so why this is happening to me? All others are sitting quite blissfully. Why everything happens to me? Poor me. Likewise, so we are introducing unnecessarily a kind of a personal this self-view to it. And we start to suffer more and more. So this is what we are trying to avoid. So when there is unsatisfactoriness available in the mind, so we recognize, okay, there is unsatisfactoriness available in the mind, kind of a frustration in the mind. So once we recognize that, we may able to understand in a way the root, the cause. So that may be the desire to get rid of this pain. That may be the desire to sort of having a pleasurable feeling instead of the ongoing painful feeling. So that very desire, if we stop, if we simply drop, then we can bear the situation. We can tolerate the situation. So with a calm mind, mind is calm, but the bodily pain may be there. Similarly, suppose if there is any kind of need. Suppose you have certain thing, but the mind is projecting some beautiful, more beautiful thing, more advanced thing. So in such situation, again, some kind of an unsatisfactoriness available in the mind. So if we can let go of that desire, okay, it is not that I am trying to tell we are not trying our hard, we are not doing the best, but rather we can do our best at the meantime, keeping the mind free, keeping the mind in a peaceful state. So this peaceful state has to be given more marks. Peaceful state has to be given more value, and that has to be encouraged, and not that unsatisfactoriness, not that frustration. So don't know whether I cleared the your question, or do you have something else?
I think so, Bhante. I think I also need to just experiment some more with my practice as well. But basically, as much as we can, if we can try to promote this calmness, the peace, that's kind of the main objective of our meditation, right?
Yeah, that is actually that more and more, that calmness going to arise when you continue a practice. It is not that kind of a calmness that we are trying to simply encourage by samatha practice, or this simply being absorbed to any jhana or something like that. But rather here the calmness, the cessation of suffering is very much available as a result of mindfulness practice. So whenever you are continuing a mindfulness practice, so you will understand, okay, things are completely transient, impermanent, producing kind of unsatisfactoriness, and you have no control over them. So likewise, mind understand and going through a certain amount of wisdom, as a result, it starts to let go of things. As a result, it now going to avoid grasping, clinging. Now, as a result, peace going to arise. So this is a kind of a stepwise process.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Anyone else has any things?
Bhante.
Yeah. Yeah, carry on.
So this meditation part, bhavana. Is at the end.
Yes.
And also, in Girimananda Sutta, and even like stanzas like, you know, sabba papa sakaranam kusala sampada. So the sakitta pariyodapanam is always coming to the last time. So, but my understanding is that, you know, we have developed all these things in the same time simultaneously.
Yes.
But why it is always at the end? Actually, some people even suggest or promote not to meditate and firstly have to, you know, finish or complete or understand fully the previous items,
mm-hmm.
and the sutras. But strangely, for some reason, the mind development part is always at the end.
Yeah.
Is there any reason, or I mean, any reason for that?
No, actually, this seven strategies, even though they have ordered like this, so we can't say it has kind of a chronological order. So it is not that we first do dasana pahatabba, then we do sangvara pahatabba, then we go to patisevana pahatabba, then we go to adivasana pahatabba, then we go to parivajana pahatabba. There is no that kind of a linear relationship. I mean, all these methods are applicable then and there, depending on the situation. All are circumstantial. Say, for example, you are traveling by a train. So at that time, suppose there is a drunken person, and he maybe is scolding you. At that time, if you have to do some kind of a patience, because you are not going to sort of blame that person and get in trouble. Rather, you simply endure it. And again, suppose you may try to avoid that person. And I mean, it depends on the circumstance. And we have to apply different methods accordingly. And once you come back home, you may start to develop your mindfulness and get into number seven. You are trying to develop mindfulness, trying to develop the various mental qualities, spiritual qualities. So likewise, all these seven are applicable, all these seven methods are useful, and what to apply, which method to apply, depend on the situation. And On the other hand, there are certain other suttas which starts with mindfulness and then has, which is actually leading towards the development of the morality, leading towards the development of the understanding, right view. So that is also there. For example, if you consider Satisampajanya Sutta. Satisampajanya Sutta is available in Anguttara Nikaya. So there the practice, the beginning is with mindfulness and then it is getting coupled with Sampajanya, clear comprehension. Then Satisampajanya go hand in hand. And it is leading to develop Hiriyottappa, you know, the moral shame and moral fear, which is causing to develop the Kaya Sucharita, Vachi Sucharita, Mano Sucharita. Now you are little careful about how you are using your body, how you are using the words, how you are using the mind. So kind of restraint going to build up. So this restraintment going to build the Sila. And this Sila going to develop Samadhi. So likewise, a beautiful relationship is mentioned in this Satisampajanya Sutta. Starts with Satisampajanya. You know, I mean, therefore, various approaches are there. And therefore, we can't say, according to Sabbasava Sutta, these seven strategies are in a particular order and we have to apply strategies in order. It is not. All these strategies we have to apply depending on the situation. When the situation where we need to tolerate, we need to be patient, that strategy has to be applied. If we can avoid kind of bad person, if we can avoid some dangerous place, we can apply that strategy. When there is a defilement aroused in the mind, we can apply that strategy, vinodana pahadappa. And when we are in our meditation hour, we can apply number 7, bhavana pahadappa. So likewise, so this practice, this all 7 strategies are strategies we have to use then and there according to the situation.
Actually, what I was asking is, yeah, that's what I normally kind of do, but
yeah.
Some people, some friends, in fact, you know, they say that, okay, we don't have to do meditation, it is at the end. even actually, Arya Sangha Marge also, you know, Samma, Sati, Samma, Samadhi is at the end. So, some people tend to think that way. And
yes.
I was thinking, is that the reason why people don't meditate even?
Yeah.
But it's always at the end. I mean, except the sutra, as you said, Sati Sampajanya Sutra, I'm not...
Yeah, probably I can take it maybe as the next session, maybe we can take that. That's not a long sutta either. So we can discuss certain aspects of Satisampajanya Sutta, where Buddha encourages mindfulness practice as the first thing and it leads to develop all the other necessary qualities.
Yeah.
So actually, in a way, the mindfulness practice helps us to understand about the state of our mind. Whether mind is defiled or whether mind is wholesome. So what is the situation of the current situation? So likewise, it gives some understanding about ourselves. So as a result, we can understand, okay, what is lacking in the mind? So where I need to grow? What are the shortcomings in myself? So this kind of an understanding, kind of a self-revelation going to arise because of the mindfulness practice. So therefore, starting with mindfulness is definitely going to give a benefit rather than making anything wrong. And on the other hand, if you consider Satipatthana practice, so Buddha particularly mentioned, now whenever people are coming to the sasana to become monks, so these new monks, sometimes we call novices, Buddha says to teach Satipatthana to these novices, because this is the beginning in a way. So once they know Satipatthana practice, mindfulness practice, so slowly they become sort of self-confident. The path become clear and they get encouraged and they going to understand what are the shortcomings they have. Yeah.
The other thing, Pante, sorry, if you don't mind. Now, this Yonso Manisakara here,
yes,
you know, is kind of little different to the other places where it mentioned like if you see the VP, and when it comes to that Vattapana state, the satisampada, mindfulness is Yonso Manasakara is, I think, explained a little differently, right? So what is actually the difference between satisampajanna, yonso manasikara, and mindfulness?
No, actually, the beginning stage, we can say the sati, the bare attention. We are trying to focus on the present moment. So typically, mind is obsessed with various past memories and future planning, daydreaming and everything. So mind is typically obsessed. So in order to switch off this obsession, in order to come out of this obsession, we are coming up with some present experience, and to this present experience, I am paying attention. So this is the kind of split where we are trying to make, where we are coming out of the dream now. So this is just the bare attention. Then and there, we are trying to pay attention to the present moment. But that has to be further encouraged. So then mind become mindful. Okay, certain time, say about 5 minutes, I can be mindful. The mind is staying for a while with the present experience. So once we familiarize that, once we promote that, so the mind has the capacity to maintain that mindfulness for quite a long time. Say you can 15 minutes, you can be with the breath. 20 minutes, you can maintain that mindfulness. So as a result, now it is encouraged to see the subtle qualities, certain aspects of the breath, whether it is long, whether it is short, whether this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, whether it is cool, whether it is hot. So this is where the investigation is going to come up. So this is where the clear comprehension is combined. Sampajanya going to come to the picture. So now sati and sampajanya go hand in hand. So you need mindfulness in order for the sampajanya to operate. So, and once this is available, sati sampajanya is available, so it has the quality to go to the root, go to the, rather than simply roaming in the surface. So it encourages certain deeper penetrating aspect of the mind. This is where the yoniso manasikara going to come to the picture, where sati sampajanya helps to properly observe the object, observe the scenario, and as a result, we are able to find the deep aspects, hidden layers, hidden tendencies, some internal aspects of the object. So we are going deeper. We are going to the source. So this is yoniso manasikara now going to play. So it's a kind of a linear relationship is there, but once things are developed, though, this becomes readily available.
Bhante,
I think one last question that I received.
Yes.
It says, thank you for the detailed explanation on the importance of maintaining untainted mind. However, in day-to-day life, we get flushed with influxes, which we should be abandoning. With a lot of practice, we can recognize these thoughts using mindfulness, but most of the time unable to stop reacting. We have heard that it is beneficial and easy to check the impact on the body form, on the body from these influxes, and start there. That is to see how the body sensation appears and fades away. Is that something we can practically focus on and refuge until we have strong mindfulness to cope these influxes face to face?
Yeah, I agree. Basically, all these various defilements has a big relationship with the physical sensations. When there is any kind of anger in the mind, so it produces a certain amount of heat, kind of a burning effect in the body as well. So if we are not yet confident about directly face-to-face be with the anger, then probably we can check the outcome, the resultant bodily aspects, bodily sensations. So like I said, kind of a heat, kind of a frustration, kind of a heartbeat and speed up heartbeat, and all these are different physical aspects we can take. And as you said, if there is any other defilement aroused in the mind, so it also has impact towards the body and various sensations going to arise. So we can look those sensations as well. Now, when we observe sensations, actually we are not promoting that mental state. So these mental state themselves don't have much energy. Actually, we are the ones pumping energy. We are the ones encouraging them unknowingly. But with these strategies, what we do is to avoid that encouragement, avoid being caught to them, rather coming out of them and watching them. Or else now here we are diverting our attention to something else. Those are the sensations. And as a result, sensations also going to fade away. And since we are not promoting those defilements, those defilements are also going to fade away. So all are different strategies available. So whatever convenient we can apply.
I haven't received any other questions. Does anyone else on the line have any questions to ask? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your sharing today. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I think we can wrap up today's session.
Okay. Okay, then we'll wind up the session. So thank you very much for the participation. So we'll share the merits with all the seen and unseen beings and with the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumoda.